right then, we'll call the meeting to order. Yes, ma'am, you have the floor.
Thank you, sir. Good evening, gentlemen. For the record, my name is Mary Schreider Fox of Steen, Whaler & Schreider Fox, the law firm in Ocean View. I'm here this evening on behalf of the Massey's Landing Homeowners Association and other residents in the area who are assisting the association with their effort to oppose this project. The association is a fairly new organization. In fact, it was just organized earlier this year. Its membership consists of the residents and homeowners in Massey's Landing Park, which, as you are aware, is a primarily manufactured housing community located on a portion of the Fawcett family property. I say primarily because I am aware that there's a gentleman here from whom you will be hearing later who owns a home in the park, and it's not a manufactured home. So you'll hear from him. He's going to tell you in his own words what his situation is.
Is it a dwelling?
It sounds like it's a dwelling, and I guess that would be something that this commission would have to decide, whether or not it constitutes the technical legal definition of dwelling. But in any case, you'll be hearing from him later. And getting back to just the nature of the park and the people I represent, the homes are owned by individual residents and owners, but the land is leased from the Fawcett family, or one of their companies, actually. And that is the case with respect to a good number of the communities in the Long Neck area. And as you can see from the full house we have here tonight and the many letters that you have on file, there are a lot of very interested residents and citizens from the Long Neck Road area who want to share their thoughts, comments, facts, things that they've observed. And yes, some of it will be opinion, I'm sure. But you'll also hear the facts of the reality of what they deal with and what the conditions are like in Long Neck. However, before I ask them to come up, I'm going to do the same thing that Mr. Fuqua did, and that is try to talk about some of the legal issues and to create a legal framework that I think all of the information you'll hear from some of these residents, it'll fit into that framework. Suffice it to say, I don't agree 100% with Mr. Fuqua's interpretation of the comp plan and various other zoning issues. Now, I understand all of this is being considered together, but I'm going to first address the rezoning application. As we have seen in other somewhat similar situations, here the developer is asking for a downzoning, and from medium density residential to the AR1 agricultural residential designation. And in such a situation, one might initially think, great, a down zoning, that's a good thing because it means it's a less intense zoning classification. That means we're going to have a less intense use. That works. However, that's not the case here. The stated purpose of the down zoning is not for something that fits into the regular agricultural residential district like agricultural activities or single-family homes. It's for this conditional use to create an RV resort park. And that, as we've heard here tonight, is a rather intense use, actually, with 322 RVs, 10 tent sites, lots of different amenities and things. This versus a 120-unit residential community that has previously been approved, and actually the final site plan was just recorded earlier this year for that project. So rather than a less intense use, it's our position that really when you look at all of this, you look at it together, what this project actually means, it's going to be a pretty intense use. So the fact that the applicant is seeking a downzoning, the fact that the applicant previously had agricultural residential zoning designation for many years, really doesn't dictate what the answer here should be with respect to the rezoning application. Because part of the decision-making process for this commission and ultimately the council later on is to consider what the proposed use is. Regardless of, they're asking for the AR1 zoning designation, but they have a specific purpose, a specific proposed use. And that's very important because, as the Court of Chancery in Orchard Homeowners Association versus County Council said, the rezoning applicant's proposed use of a property in question is highly relevant to the propriety of the rezoning decision in determining the appropriateness of the reclassification. without a record showing how the applicant plans to use the property, the court cannot determine later whether or not the rezoning decision was acceptable under the comp plan, under the zoning statutes, and relevant state law. So again, what the applicant wants to do with the property is really important, whether we're talking about the rezoning piece or the conditional use piece of tonight's application. And of course, one of the reasons why I mention this is because the primary objections that the association and other residents in the Long Neck area have to this proposal and the rezoning itself is because of the proposed use as an RV camp resort. Now, I've already mentioned a relevant case that we need to think about in making this determination. And now we'll move on to something you guys know very well, and that's Section 6904 of Title IX of the Delaware Code. That section guides us in making a decision about rezoning as well, because there it clearly states that zoning decisions shall be made in accordance with the comprehensive plan and shall be for the purpose of promoting the health, safety, morale, convenience, order, prosperity, or welfare of the present and future inhabitants of Sussex County. Some of the specific things that Section 6904 says must be considered are, one, the lessening of congestion in the streets, two, protection of the tax base, and three, securing from fire, flood, or other damages or dangers. It also states that reasonable consideration must be given to, among other things, the character of the particular district involved, conservation of property values and natural resources, and the general and appropriate trend and character of land, building, and population development. It's our position that tonight's application is problematic on all of those fronts, beginning first with the comp plan. Mr. Fuqua emphasized that this is not a low-density area. However, I disagree with that just a little bit. He's accurate in saying that this is part of the environmentally sensitive developing overlay zone, but it's an overlay designation. There is an underlying designation according to the comp plan and future land use map, and that is low density. Now, that doesn't mean we're not in a growth zone, so that's not my argument. But I think it's important because low density areas and the environmentally sensitive developing overlay zone, they both have certain guidelines in the comp plan that we're supposed to use in determining whether or not something's appropriate. And what I'm talking about are in the future land use element, where it talks about in low-density areas, business development should be largely confined to businesses addressing the needs of the primary uses of agricultural activities and single-family detached homes. Retail and office uses should focus on providing convenience, goods, and services to the nearby residents. In the environmentally sensitive developing areas, a range of housing types are deemed appropriate, as are retail and office use, or light commercial or institutional uses that provide convenient services and that allow people to work close to home. And the pending application just simply does not fit into any of those use categories just mentioned. After all, this is not a residential project. Nobody's argued that it is. It's an RV park. There won't be any residents. There'll be transient, weekly, possibly daily guests, and that's okay when you're talking about a campground, but it doesn't fit into what the comp plan future land use element says is appropriate for low density with the environmentally sensitive overlay designation. With regard to the goods and services being provided, as Mr. Clark pointed out, as required by the county code, any of the goods and services that they're providing within the park are to be for the people in the park and not open and available generally to the rest of the neighborhood and to the other residents in the area. So one can't argue that the goods and services are for the convenience of the nearby residents or that they complement the nearby residential or agricultural activities, if there were any, because they're only there to serve the park guests. And all of this is really important to consider, talking about the future land use element. That's such an important thing because, as the future land use element says, quote, it is probably the most influential part of this comprehensive plan. The county zoning regulations are intended to carry out the future land use plan, end quote. And that's page 3-7. And as already mentioned, state law requires that all zoning regulations be in accordance with the comp plan. There are other requirements of state law that are also left wanting by the pending application when we take into consideration the proposed use of the subject property. For example, the character of the particular district is problematic because it is residential. It's very, very residential. As you've heard already tonight, and you can see from the maps that the applicant has provided, there are lots of communities and lots of people living in the nearby area in the various manufactured home communities. This is a commercial enterprise stuck right in the middle of a densely populated residential area. It just doesn't fit. It's not in keeping with the character of the surrounding neighborhood. We run into another problem when considering the promotion of health, safety, morale, convenience, order, prosperity, or welfare of the present and future inhabitants of Sussex County. A typical definition of inhabitant, according to Merriam-Webster's online dictionary, is one that occupies a particular place regularly or routinely. A typical synonym of inhabitant, according to that same source, is resident. In this instance, when we consider the well-being of the present residents in the immediately surrounding areas, the pending application makes those residents worry. As the letters on file with the commission that Mr. Lank mentioned at the beginning of this hearing tell you, they're worried about their safety because of the already terrible traffic problem on Long Neck Road, both in terms of backups and the shoulder. Although there is a shoulder, the letter, as some of the letters tell you, and as you'll hear from some of the residents here tonight, there are vehicles parked all up and down the shoulder all the time during the summer to access the boat ramp that's managed by the state of Delaware. And so effectively, there really is not a shoulder for many months of the year, particularly the summer season, when this park will be operational. That's a concern. The letters tell you that they're worried about their prosperity and how this commercial venture, located in their backyards for some of them, will affect their ability to sell their homes. Again, although they're manufactured home communities and the land is leased, these people own their homes, and they buy and sell their homes just like anybody else. Some of them are going to have RVs parked possibly at less than 100 or even closer to maybe 50 feet from their backyard. The letters tell you that they're worried about their health, safety, and welfare in terms of their ability to evacuate during storms. And I know this has already been brought up tonight about evacuation plans and how that will work, but the residents are here to tell you that, as a practical matter, the facts of what it's like and what they've experienced when there has been a flooding issue and they've had to evacuate because of a storm, those are important things to consider, the practical reality of what it's like. The letters tell you that they're worried about their health and safety in terms of emergency vehicles, being able to reach them, which sometimes, according to some of the letters, is already a little bit problematic because of the dense population and just the sheer number of people that are there already. And again, with shoulder conditions being what they are during the summer season, a lot of large RVs that can't pull off the road because there are already people parked up and down the road, whether they should be there or not, we can't control that. They're there. So that might be a problem. And all of these worries and concerns are set forth in the letters that are on file and that Mr. Lank mentioned. And the folks who will be speaking in a few moments will be addressing, or at least some of them will be addressing, those issues. We're going to try not to be repetitive, but you will hear some of those stories. Now, when you consider all of these things that you're going to hear from the residents and what you'll read in the letters, you'll realize that while the pending application might be good for people from outside the state of Delaware or maybe from northern counties who are coming to Sussex to visit, it's not going to be beneficial to the inhabitants and residents of the Long Neck Road area. Tourism is important. There's no question about that. No one can deny that because Sussex County, that's part of our bread and butter. I understand it. My clients understand that. But the well-being and safety of the inhabitants, our residents, cannot take a backseat to the promotion of tourism alone. The comp plan tells us that we have to consider tourism, But it also tells us, and so does state law, in no uncertain terms, that we also have to consider the residents and their well-being. Now moving on to the next set of problems that we find with the application, and that concerns the statutory requirement that consideration be given to the lessening of congestion in the streets, which is the hot topic, the traffic issue. I've already mentioned briefly that some of the letters talk about the congestion and the parking on the shoulders. However, in addition to that very real problem, I want to draw your attention to something that also has been mentioned, and that's the traffic impact study from 2005. Now, I understand that DLDOT is the authority with respect to those types of things, but we just want to draw your attention to a couple of things about that traffic impact study that we think this commission might want to consider. One obvious thing is that the traffic impact study is 8 years old. According to its comments and what we heard here tonight, DLDOT apparently doesn't think that conditions have changed much since 2005 in the Long Neck area. But the letters of protest and the people who are here tonight will tell you they have. They've changed quite a bit since 2005 in the last 8 years. Additionally, my reading of the TAS, at least, it stated that the trip generation computed in that study used comparable land uses, which at that time, and it's been confirmed by the applicant's presentation tonight, the TIS was prepared in contemplation of proposing a residential community. And that's the 120-unit RPC that's been approved. So the proposed use here is not at all like a residential use. It's not a comparable use at all. It's a commercial use. The vehicles are recreational vehicles and much larger. It's a different type of vehicle. Whether that was considered, I don't know. Something to think about. What about the possible daily comings and goings of the employees? There will be 45 to 55 employees, according to the information on file. Was that taken into consideration when you're computing the trip generation and trip count for this project? Again, these are just things to think about when reviewing the various studies and other materials on file. Again, I understand DLDOT may get to grant the entrance permits, and they are the state's authority on traffic issues. But this commission and the county council are the entities charged with recommending and determining whether this project is appropriate and lawful in this location, considering not just the traffic studies, but the actual traffic conditions. And that's what you'll hear about shortly. Now, so far I've focused on the rezoning part of the application, and everything I've said applies to the conditional use part as well, and I certainly won't repeat it. But there are a couple of different things to talk about with respect to the conditional use part of the application, and that is section 115-171 of the county code. That section states that conditional uses are to be, quote, essential and desirable for the general convenience and welfare, end quote. For all the reasons already stated, it's our position that this project is not for the convenience and welfare of the general community. It's for the general welfare of the developer, and that's okay as a commercial venture. But for conditional use purposes, we have to look at the broader picture. In addition to section 115-171, of course, we have to address the various requirements in 115-172H for campgrounds. In subparagraph 4, it states that each campsite must be at least 2,000 square feet in size and have a width of at least 40 feet. Now, this only applies to 10 of the proposed sites, but the preliminary site plan, and it's been confirmed here this evening, the 10 sites proposed, there are only 10, but they will be half of the required size. The county code doesn't say just RV sites, or it just says, the campsites. So we already have 10 that don't comply. And now we get to the 400-foot rule, which is set forth in subparagraph 3. While we understand the technical legal definition under the county code of the word dwelling, as a practical matter, and again, this has been raised and discussed a little bit, as a practical matter, the manufactured home communities that are in the nearby area, these are the people's dwellings in the way that we define that on the street. I'm not saying that the Klan doesn't comply with this technical legal requirement, but it's something to think about. You have that requirement there for a reason, and that is to try to keep the RVs out of people's backyards. These RVs will be in these people's backyards. The fact that they are manufactured homes is of no consequence to these people because this is where they live. And these things are going to be right up against the edge of the property. Potnets communities, Dockside and Seaside, the Massey's Landing community that I represent, they're on the same parcel. So the requirement wouldn't have applied to them anyway. But as a practical matter, and in considering whether or not this project is appropriate for this neighborhood, for this zone, it's still something that needs to be considered, even if it's not a technical violation of Section 115-172H. And lastly, Mr. Fuqua did his homework, read my comments from the Love Creek presentation, so he knew what I was going to say about the recreational facilities and things. And although I understand his points, I think it's compelling that this section of the code, this particular subparagraph, is silent with respect to some of these amenities that are being proposed in this and other similar projects. One of the general rules of thumb, and I believe that there's a provision in the county code that says this, as most of the municipal codes in the area, if it's not specifically permitted, it's prohibited. In Section 115-172H, there is something that's specifically permitted, and those are some of the amenities that they're proposing, and those are, quote, small retail businesses. But there's no language in there about these various recreational facilities and all of the different things and amenities that are being proposed. I think it makes for a really neat campground proposal, but I don't think that it fits squarely under the requirements of your code to have all of those things. I think that it's our submission that it goes beyond what was contemplated when that portion of the code was written. And I think it's important to also note that other provisions, other sections in 115-172 specifically do allow for recreational facilities, and they specifically talk about them. For example, in the mobile home park context, recreational land is specifically contemplated in subparagraph G. In the swimming or tennis club context, outdoor recreational facilities are specifically permitted, and requirements concerning the pumps and filters and so on are set out right there. But again, nothing for campgrounds. And I think that is an important thing to consider. And while Mr. Fuqua is right, they're not specifically prohibited, I think that's an important thing in terms of zoning law. The fact that they aren't specifically permitted or prohibited, that means if it's silent, they're prohibited. So you'll be happy to hear that my next words are, in closing, for all of the reasons stated so far, and the reasons in the letters, and the reasons that you're going to hear from these residents tonight, we sincerely hope that the commission will recommend denial of this project. Simply put, this kind of a commercial venture just does not fit in this residential community on Long Neck Road. So I want to thank you for listening to these comments and these thoughts. And at this time, I know that we have some audiovisual. The association and some of the neighboring communities have come together to try to organize some speakers in an effort to try to be efficient, not repetitive. If we have some overlap, I apologize in advance. Sometimes it's unavoidable. But they've tried really hard to streamline their presentations. So we have a few speakers in a row that will be part of the organized effort, if that's okay with the commission.
That's great. You have that. Orchestrated, laid out, you know how you want to do that, is that right?
Yes, sir. So
I don't need to be calling on people. You're going to call on people for a while.
I'm going to call on a few people at least.
Okay. Well,
and then when we're done, you can have at it, sir.
Well, we want anybody who wants to speak. I want to give them a chance to. But if you have, as part of your representation, have other people you wish to have speak, then I'm certainly going to allow you to do that. So go ahead.
Great. Then the first person to come up is going to be Mr. Jeff Marks. He is a resident of Massey's Landing and the vice president of the new association.
All right. All right, sir. I need you to introduce yourself. I also need you to sign in on that sheet, if you look up right up there, you go. No. Perfect. Thank you. And I'll and when you're ready, I need you to introduce yourself too. So then you can have the floor and screen, whatever else.
Okay, Mr. Chairman and gentlemen on the commission, my name is Jeff Marks, and I live at Massey's Landing. I have a residence there, and I also have a residence in Newark, Delaware. I have a master's degree with a finance concentration, and I've been in the risk management field for over 20 years. So, I understand that opinions do not count. And Mr. Fuquay was very clear about that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to stick to the facts tonight, and I'm going to give you some perspective through some pictures. We're not here to oppose the development of the property. We are supportive of the development of the property in accordance with the current zoning and as recommended in the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan. We are here tonight to represent the communities along Neck Road. Mr. Fuquay also stated when we talked about the petitions that these petitions were signed without people seeing the plan. That is not a fact. We shared the site plans with the majority of the folks who signed the petitions. It was not a robo-signing effort. We are here to protect the safety, the tax base, and quality of life of the residents of Long Neck. We are here to recognize the appropriate buffers as required by Chapter 115, Article 24 of the Conditional Use Section. So some interesting facts. Sussex County, and this information was gleaned out of the Economic Development Office study that was just published in May. Sussex County population grew 25.9% from 2000 to 2010. The fastest growing municipality in Sussex County was Long Neck at 55%. It had over twice the growth rate of the rest of Sussex County. And again, these facts come out of the economic report that was just issued. And I think this will be important as we start to talk about traffic and what that means. Long Neck is also the sixth largest municipality for housing in Sussex County. And the average age on Long Neck Road is 62 years old. The source is citydata.com. So if you look at the average age from the same source in Sussex County in general, it's 44. So the population on this road is 20 years more senior than the average in Sussex County. So what does that mean? That means emergency response time matters. If you've ever been in one of those situations, you understand that seconds, minutes, sometimes make the big difference. So I know you're familiar with this, but I wanted to share it for the audience as well. If you were to look, you would see, and it's been talked about several times tonight, and what I'll do is make sure that if we've touched on these things, I'll move through them rather quickly. But this is an environmentally sensitive area, and today it is developed, it is zoned as MR, which is low density. So we heard about the investment levels, and I understand you're familiar with these as well. So I'll paraphrase what's in the comprehensive plan. And the way that I understand this is investment level one and investment level two, the state will use its spending and management tools to promote growth and development in the area. This project is in investment level three. where development may be appropriate, but there are significant considerations. And what we're asking you tonight is to make sure that we give this the proper consideration. And infrastructure is not necessarily a top priority in investment level three. So we talked about downzoning. Is the downzoning aligned with the comprehensive plan as it stands today? As it stands today, I would argue that it is not. It is not aligned with the comprehensive plan as set forth today. And can we afford it? What are the one-time and annual revenue impacts? If you look at some of the other projects, there were significant one-time tax impacts that were realized through realty transfer and property tax when we did the impact studies. There was one done in Bethany, and there was another one done in Love Creek. Today, we're working with Todd Lawson's office and talking to some council folks to make sure that we're able to do the impact study on this project. But 50% of the county's revenue comes from realty transfer and property taxes. So in the Bethany project, we were looking at $800,000 up front, and in Love Creek, $2 million in revenue to the county. And then there's subsequent property taxes that happen every year based on the assessment. So I think this is an important point, because if you compare the tax impact of placing an RV park on this property as proposed, it will not generate the same type of tax income as would a low-density housing development as was proposed in 2007. So I ask you, is the plan a win for the community in Sussex County, or does it just benefit a select few? So we talked about this with regard to the technical definitions around a dwelling, which I can appreciate. But in the practical definition of a dwelling, it's where people live. And in fact, there is a dwelling in Dockside, which is the neighborhood on the north side here, if you just allow me to do this, right in this entrance, that both meets the technical definition as stated and the appropriate 400-foot buffer was not considered with that dwelling. So this is a picture of what it may look like. The red outlined areas, if you use the practical definition of a dwelling, these areas would no longer be able to be included in the plan. And you say, how do you know? I went out, measured it, had a laser range finder, took some folks with us, understood where the property lines are. They're all clearly marked. They're very simple, and went down 400 feet. And if you were to do that and run that perpendicular with Mr. Tunnel's property, where there are homes, it would, for the most part, eliminate this project west of the existing mobile home park and on that bottom circle at the 400 foot. So we go to the floodplains and wetlands map. Does it make sense to place an RV park in a floodplain? This area is prone to flooding and often cut off by coastal storms. It floods a lot. When I say I've been there, I've been visiting Massey's Landing for over 40 years. So I'm very familiar with the area and the storms and the tides that exist. So, for some perspective, this is what Long Neck Road looks like when it's flooded. There's no way in. And there's no way out. So we talked about the shoulders and how wide they were. I believe we were told they were 8 foot. So I wanted to give some perspective of what the shoulders truly look like. But pictures can be deceiving, so I decided to put my pickup truck there on the side of the road, and it's not 8 foot wide. In fact, on the shoulder of this road, there's salt marsh, there's ditches. They're very unforgiving. So I think this must be considered when we talk about the infrastructure and traffic. So driving behavior. This picture was taken last weekend. You can see the planning and zoning sign that was just put out there. There's oncoming traffic. There's your RV. That's a state vehicle that actually crossed the double yellow line to get around the RV. It's not this guy I'm worried about. It's these people here, oncoming traffic. Again, understand 62 years old, 63 years old is the average age there. They're responsible drivers, but this type of activity, you'll see an increase in this. And I think that increases the risk. So if you live there long enough, you've seen these. I've seen many of them, and when we get these types of notices, what happens is everybody moves their boats, packs up the items of their homes, and they get it out of harm's way. And it's a very busy road during these types of events. So we talked a little bit about this popular park model RV. As you can see, I took a picture of this one last weekend to give everyone some idea of what these look like. But how do you move these types of RVs during hurricanes and those coastal storms? Because those events happen in September, October. And I believe the number was 10%. And these will pose some additional risk there in the park. So after the storm comes through, here's Bayshore. They weren't able to get that one out of there. And these park models, because they're not able to be moved very quickly, are more prone to damage. There's another picture of the Bayshore after the hurricane. So these park models pose additional liability and risk and cleanup for Sussex County. So here's Massey's Landing during Hurricane Sandy. This is the magnitude of flooding that we're talking about. That's actually my parents' house. That deck there is probably 2.5 foot off the ground. So we don't get a little bit of water. When we're talking about the floods, we get a lot of water. Give you some other perspective. Here's Potnets, same type of situation. So the traffic study, and we talked a lot about this tonight. And again, I'm going to get back to facts. We hired a traffic engineer. He works for Kirshner. He worked for DelDOT for 30 years. Wasn't able to be here with us tonight. But he gave us some very valuable information And I'm going to give you that information, and these are facts.
I have to raise a question here. We can't have somebody testifying as to what an expert would say.
Mr. Fuqua does raise a point. If you are going to testify as an expert, you need to put your qualifications in the area in which you're testifying on the record, okay?
Yes.
So I'm going to say that he does raise a valid point. You can't really testify to what somebody else is saying.
I mean, I think what we should do for the record, though, is, and Mr. Fuqua raised a valid point, and it's been hammered home to the county in court cases over the years by the Delaware courts. But I think what we can do is hear what the gentleman has to say and give it whatever weight's appropriate, you know, whether it should have been considered expert testimony or not, you know, because one of the concerns that I do have is that, you know, if somebody was going to offer expert testimony, the expert should have been here to give it,
yeah.
You know. So, and I mean, I hate to say that, but that's the fact of the matter.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that. So what I'll do, if this is acceptable, is I've had conversations myself with Orth Rogers and Derek Kennedy, who produced the
it's kind of the same thing, because you're kind of testifying to what somebody else said. So.
Okay. Fair enough.
I'm sorry. It's just what the rules of it's the way the law has treated us over the years. So
I mean, again, I think we can hear what you have to say. I don't want to discourage
you. Go ahead and give your.
But well, it's again, it's the weight that we can give it the courts
just
have
letting
said to
you,
us.
Letting you know in the structure decisions. Of your comments yeah. that this is the light in which we have to view it. So okay.
I appreciate that, Mr. Okay. Chairman. Okay. So what we'll do then is look at the deficiencies noted in the traffic impact study in 2005. You can go to page 52 and 43 and read those. So they're not my opinion, they're fact. And they are deficiencies that were noted by Derek Kennedy in the Orth Rogers and Associates study. Okay. What else exists in that study? Is they did a build analysis where they recognized that there would be significant growth and there would be vehicle delays as a result of that growth. So let me get back to just facts. We talked a lot tonight about this new proposal and how it would raise traffic volume on Long Neck Road. Different perspective. This is facts off DelDOT's site. In 2005, the intersection of Bank Road had an average volume of 7,786 vehicles per day. In that same spot, on DelDOT's site, today there's 11,439 vehicles. So the baseline numbers are vastly different than what was stated in 2005 and in the 2005 study, by 47%, 47% increase in the amount of baseline traffic that needs to be considered. So the state boat ramp, this is what this looks like. There's 80 parking spots for trucks with trailers, 20 for other vehicles. I talked to Rob Gannot from Assawomen Wildlife Area and asked him what were the state's plans to deal with this. And at this time, they don't know how they're going to deal with this proposal, because they understand there will be additional volume. And if you have the opportunity, I'd encourage you to come this weekend and there's no doubt these trucks and trailers will be backed up a quarter mile down the road, right across where the proposed entrances are. So, in my opinion, this plan must be denied. The proposal is to place an RV park on a road that is a floodplain, when there's only one way in and one way out. And as we saw, sometimes no way in and no way out. There are currently over 4,500 RV sites available today within the area. Downzoning this property for MR to AR is in direct conflict with the future land use map of the comprehensive plan, as it's stated today. The revenue impact to Sussex County due to the loss of realty transfer and property taxes. Relying on an 8-year-old traffic study. Proposing a plan without the appropriate buffers as required for conditional use. Having no plan or understanding as to the impact of the current state boat ramp and facilities. And putting the current residents and emergency response teams of Long Neck Road at risk in the event of an evacuation. Thank you.
All right, sir. We thank you.
Can I get a copy of your PowerPoint presentation?
Do you have a copy of your slides there that we could have put on the record?
Yes, I do. I'll hand it to you, Mr. Wright.
Perfect. Thank you. Yes. Mr. Wright.
If you don't mind, I'll switch to the next presentation.
Right ahead.
While he's switching things out, I'd like to ask Mr. William Higgins, who is the president of Potnets Coveside, Dockside, and Seaside Communities, to come forward.
All righty. Mr. Higgins, I'm going to ask you if you would sign in that sheet there.
Where is the boat? Oh.
I think he took it.
There we go.
That's right. Watch these guys. Picking on stuff.
Get my copy.
We'll just go right here.
That'd be fine.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Good evening, folks. My name is Bill Higgins. I am president of the Homeowners Association.
Mr. Higgins. Ladies and gentlemen, got to ask you again. Keep it down. We got to listen to this guy right here. Go ahead.
Good evening, folks. My name is Bill Higgins, and I am president of the Homeowners Association for Potnets, Dockside, and Seaside, which consists of 500 residents. The northern and southern side of Dockside and Seaside borders within 50 feet of the proposed Castaways RV Park. I'm a retired police lieutenant and a career fire chief consisting of 175 personnel. During these 40 years of public safety, I have done impact studies for police, fire, and EMS response for several local governments. I've worked closely with Sussex and Wicomico County code enforcement officers and planning and zoning. First, I would like to say I'm not against RV parks. I have a travel trailer. I have visited Castaways on Route 611 near Ocean City, Maryland. It's located at the proper place. It has two evacuation routes. This is not so with this project. There are so many issues that affect the life, safety, and the welfare of not only the residents on Long Neck Road, but the 322 guests of the proposed Castaways Massey Landing Project. In 05, we did not contest the building of townhomes for which it is presently zoned for. There was a traffic count done for the townhomes project. I believe this count, which was done in the wintertime, is being used for the Castaways RV project. We have requested DLDOT to do another count in the summer. For some reason, the townhome project failed. It would have been the ideal spot for townhomes, not for RVs. Let's talk about the life safety issues. Number one, would you as a guest of Castaways want your children playing around three unprotected lagoons, which are up to 7 feet deep? Number two, would you want your children in rented canoes in Burton's Pond, Rehoboth Bay, and Indian River? Think of all the canoes that will be capsized and lives lost. And incidentally, I was just told a while ago that Burton's Pond is contaminated. There's no clamming or crabbing. Take a look on a weekend and observe all the boat and jet ski traffic, and the wake they create. Number three, the map shows they propose to enlarge an unused beach facing Massey's Ditch. Unused beach. Think of all persons who will be swept away by the strong, swift current, as a gentleman mentioned a while ago. Number four, they propose to rent golf cars. Will there be an age requirement for them? It is against the law to operate a golf car on a public highway. Will they be running up and down Long Neck Road visiting other parts? You bet. Planning and zoning requires the applicant to post the requirements on the bulletin boards for evacuations. How many will read it? It must be on three local radio stations and announced on a PA. What if they are in town for the day? Everyone will wait till the last minute to evacuate, believe me. The formula for an RV is three person per unit. With the employees, that figures 1,000 persons plus their vehicles, RVs, and boats. I live in Dockside, and I have evacuated four times. Some did not leave early and had to be removed by dump trucks and military vehicles. I would like to show you some pictures that Sandy Storm created. I'm sorry we didn't get it on the computer tonight, but if I could give Mr. Lank, there's enough for each commissioner.
Thanks,
there
sir.
Three pictures. The first picture that you're looking at is the entrance to Dockside. Note the pontoon floating down the road. The woods in the background is the border to the Fawcett property. Okay, picture number two shows the flooding of the entrance to the Massey Landing State Boat Ramp. In the background is Massey's Ditch. So you're looking at all 100 spots, that's what there is, 100 spots down there, completely underground, underwater. Number three picture, it shows the flooding of Long Neck Road near Dockside. And I believe we had a slide a while ago on that. And the depth of this picture, the water is 2 feet deep. Okay? Okay, next, let's talk about the traffic safety concerns on Long Neck Road. If you've never been on Long Neck Road, it is 5 miles long. It has a single lane eastbound and a single lane westbound. The eastbound lane comes to a dead end at the state boat ramp. This means whatever goes down Long Neck Road must at some point in time return the same way. 2 years ago, our association met with the Delaware State Police Troop 7 commander concerning the reckless driving and the speeders on Long Neck Road. Thanks to the county council, we now have an officer stationed on Long Neck Road 24 hours a day during the summer. Last year, there were 102 accidents on Long Neck Road. That figure is one every 3 days. And incidentally, of those, 30 were PI, personal injury, and one fatal. There are 10,000 people living on Long Neck Road in the summer. Can you imagine what the traffic will be like with another 1,000 people from castaways? Several weeks ago, a delivery truck turned over. The road was completely blocked for 1.5 hours. An ambulance or fire equipment would not be able to get through. There are presently 5 RV parks on or near Long Neck Road now. I have met with most managers. They tell me that half of their spots are empty at all times. In ending, I would like to say, please do not make any decision until you have a chance to visit Long Neck Road during this Memorial Day weekend. Note all the traffic. Look at the 6 areas that flood over the road. And don't forget to see the cars and the empty boat trailers parked on Long Neck Road, because it looks like a circus. because 100 spots are filled at the Massachusetts State Park. Everybody likes growth. This isn't growth. We have enough growth. Townhouses pay county taxes. RVers do not. Thank you for listening.
All right, sir. We thank you.
Our next presenter and final one of the formal group is Mr. Chuck Bartels, who's a resident of Massey's Landing and a member of the Massey's Landing Homeowners Association.
Good evening, and thank you for the opportunity to speak this evening. My name is Chuck Bartels. I'm a resident of Wilmington, Delaware, and my family has had a home in Massey's Landing since 1975. I have sent Mr. Lank the email of the presentation. I have a few copies here as well.
Mine didn't print very well, so it helps. Mine didn't print very well, so this will help.
Okay. What I'm going to talk about this evening are the environmental impacts of that will be addressed by the production of this proposed project. Most of the information that I'm going to provide to you is from the same sources that you've heard from earlier, and they're all cited in the report, and they'll cite it on the PowerPoint as well. Okay, as you know, 51 acres. Now, I put 51/82 acres on here because in the presentation of the site plan that we have over here at one point when we were addressing the group, the word initial phase was used when discussing this particular 51-acre plot, which leads me to believe that it might lead to something of the original plan that was put in, which is 82 acres. I am going to just address the 51 acres. Okay, the environmental impacts are overlapping if you include the whole thing. You have four general ecological zones in this area. You have forests, which include loblolly pine, successional, maritime, and loblolly pine wetlands. Wetlands include high tide and low tide wetlands, as well as loblolly pine wetland forests. There are sandy areas, and there's a cultivated lawn. Yeah, of these areas, there are four zones of the 10 vegetation zones that are listed in the area. And this area, that's from DENREC, as you can see. The area has major environmental concerns due to its tidal water and wetland frontage. Six of the 10 vegetative zones and communities are water-related on this property. These areas provide food, shelter, reproductive sites for many species, and they also contribute to reducing runoff into the adjacent waters and wetlands of the Indian River Bay, Inland Bay watershed. Okay, this is the from the vegetation report, the communities that was produced as part of the plan. And you can see the areas, different colors for different objects. And the key is there on the side. This was done as part of the PLUS plan, okay, that was provided for the our proposal. Okay, as you look at this, this is similar to the map that is over here, okay, a satellite photograph, 2013. And I put in the purple lines, the magenta lines, would be the 51-acre site. And then the rest of it outlined in the black dotted line would be the part that was in the original plan, which includes the Massey's Landing Park and the Fawcett home. Okay. Wetlands and forested areas. This is the northern section, okay, on the north side of Long Neck Road. The areas outlined in blue, okay, are areas of wetland. I put this on here just as a close-up to give you a better perspective as opposed to just seeing maps. You have the areas in dotted lines separate out the forested areas. Now, these forested areas are flooded forest areas. They are within the loblolly pine wetland forest area. Okay, primary environmental concerns. And it would be three in number, and that is habitat destruction of the forested areas and the wetlands, pollution, and hydrology. DENREC, in their wildlife action plan, identifies tidal high and low wetlands and forest blocks as, and I quote, key habitats in the Inland Bay watershed. Four of the 10 vegetation communities are state ranked as rare to uncommon. And that's from the Natural History and Environmental and Endangered Species section. I apologize. Okay. Now, in terms of habitat destruction, we'll look at each one individually. We have forests first. Okay. If you look at the diagrams that you've seen earlier in the satellite picture over there, that these are the last undeveloped forested areas on the eastern end of Long Neck. It was said earlier that it's just a little pod. Well, that's part of the problem. It is just a little pod. It's the last pod. The proposed plan plans for removal or fragmentation of at least 32 acres of forests. And these forests have been identified as ecologically important core habitat by the Delaware Ecological Network, DEN. Core habitat is considered relatively intact natural ecosystems, which provides high-quality habitat for native plants and animals. Species found in these forests include, and this is only a partial list, obviously, eastern box turtle, deer, wild turkey, fox, numerous songbirds, woodpeckers, and a wide variety of invertebrates. Now, it was stated earlier that during the state's visit to the place that no endangered species were found, and that was true. But later in that same paragraph, you will see that they also mentioned that because the survey was done in February, that many of the species that could that they might be looking for would also not be available. DENREC stated that removal of forest on this site is strongly discouraged, and that they highly recommend forested areas of this site be left intact. And that was from the PLUS review. Forests provide an essential buffer zone between land and wetlands, or water, allowing landward movement of wetlands and filtering runoff from uplands before entering the wetland bays. And that's from the Delaware Wetlands Action Plan. Okay, here we have, again, satellite pictures. It's broken into two parts. The one on the upper left is the on the northern side, of Long Neck Road, and then the other one is on the southern side. These are the forested areas of the site. Okay, so as we look at the forested areas of this particular site, this is what they look like. Okay, they are not completely invasive species from Phragmites. There's a mix. There's cordgrass and all the other native vegetations that you would see. You are looking at the entrance of the lagoon. You can see the forests in the background, wetlands along the edges, okay, as an example. Go ahead. Okay, the forest area surrounds these lagoons. All the lagoons in the system, if you look at the diagram, okay, have forests on them, around them, if not wetlands. These are the buffer zones that we'll be talking about later. Yeah. Many deer, I took a boat ride back there 3 weeks ago. Okay, and that's where I took many of these pictures. And one of the animals that comes out, utilizes the fields, lives in the forest, okay, are the white-tailed deer, and you can see it there, okay, in the center of the screen. You take away the one last piece of forest in the area, the animals that are dependent upon the forest, some can move, some can't, and that becomes an issue. Okay, then you have many birds utilize this area. This is one called a kingfisher. Kingfishers perch on a limb, okay, waiting for small fish to come by. They fly down out of the out of the branch, collect the fish, go up to the branch, eat again. There were three of those present on the day that I was taking these pictures. Okay, south of Long Neck Road, okay, is the mid-successional loblolly forest. This is the forest area. This is not inundated by tidal water except in extreme conditions. This would be your upland forest. Okay, wetlands, you've heard a lot about wetlands this evening. Tidal wetlands provide habitat for estrogen-dependent species, spawning in nursery areas for economically and ecologically important species of fish and invertebrates. Some of the ones that utilize the marshlands in the Inland Bay estuary and watershed include weakfish, menhaden, croaker, killifish, blue crabs, and grass shrimp. They provide a storm buffer because they absorb water, which means that as storm tides come up, the lands behind them are not flooded as severely because the wetlands act as a sponge, okay, to absorb that water. There's a decrease in shoreline erosion if intact wetlands are there because the root systems hold the soil in place. Denrec has gone to trying to get people to use and plant wetland plants like cordgrass as an alternative to a straight riprap erosion control system. Filter runoff. Okay, so as the water runs off the land, the roots, the stems, and trunks of trees slow the flow of water. When they slow the flow of water, that allows it to be absorbed, and not as much gets into the nearby waterways. In addition to that, by slowing down the water, any pollutants in there also get to be taken up by the roots of the plants, and therefore reduce the amount of pollutants entering an already stressed inland bay. And lastly, they produce detritus. Detritus is decaying plant material. In inland bay and lagoon and estuarine systems, detritus is one of the most important bases of estuarine food chains. And that's from the Center for Inland Bays. Okay, as we look here, there are a number of different kinds of marshes on the wetlands on the property. You have the tree forested wetlands, which are not always underwater. Okay, they're underwater during some spring tides, high tides, when you have northeast storms and obviously major hurricanes. You also have the areas along the top edge, for example, are fringing marshes. They are not large marshes. They average 2, 3, 5 feet in width. Okay, but they, you know, provide those same benefits that we were just talking about. So as you can see, most of the areas most of the shoreline areas are actually wetlands of some degree or the other. The arrow on the far bottom left-hand corner, pointing to the left-hand corner, that is the wetland that is predominantly Phragmites. And the rest are a mix of the various vegetation. Okay, so this is what I'm talking about by a fringing, wetland. This one's a little thicker than some of the others, but they vary, as I said, they vary in width. They fringe the edge. You can see the root systems, small piece of sandy beach there. We'll talk about those later. Okay, this particular diagram is from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife's National Wetlands Inventory. And the bluish color, okay, are, as you can see, the code, the E1P, are estuarine intertidal emergent irregularly flooded wetlands. These are your basic salt marshes. The green areas are palustrine forested areas, okay, and they're dominated by the loblolly pine tree, and they are temporarily flooded. So they are still wetland in nature. So if you compare the wetland inventory map from the Fish and Wildlife Service in the National Wetland Inventory to the proposed development, you see that some of the areas, okay, that are within those blue and green sections are actually proposed to be sites of the developing park. Okay, there are a large number of species that depend directly or indirectly on the wetlands. Construction of this site It's water-dependent amenities and the increase in human activity. And here, using the same statistics that you heard earlier, with an average of three people per recreational vehicle site, have anywhere from 900 to where if you were doing the full project area, including the mobile home sites, as many as 1,500 guests, okay, will cause major impacts in these areas. Now, I'm not going to read all, you know, you guys can read, I'm sure, all the different species that are there. But what's important is they said in the earlier presentation that there were no endangered species, and that's probably correct. Okay, but there are other designations for species that have environmental concern. Denrex, Delaware Wildlife Action Plan, produces a list of what are called species of greatest conservation need. And the species that I listed here are not a complete list of those that utilize wetlands in Delaware. These are species that have been observed, okay, or in that particular area or in areas surrounding them. And some of those species have particular importance. Diamondback terrapin, for example, you know, the regulations have been placed for crab pots. If anybody crabs, you have to have the turtle excluder devices in there because they're of concern. Down below Indian River Inlet, they've put up barriers and made artificial sand ridges so that the turtles don't have to cross the road because they live in the wetland and they reproduce on sandbanks. So this is actually has a designation as a species of conservation concern, which may need federal protection later. Okay, so that was in the report as well. Okay, so the threats to wetlands, okay, as a result of the development, the majority of the wetlands in the inland bays watershed have been degraded. Okay, 68% due to the development of buffer areas. Okay, and this is from Denrex Wetland Monitoring and Assessment Program. Buffer areas are strips of native vegetation between the wetlands and open water. Okay, and wetlands, water, and the development, which provide, okay, filtration of runoff, space for the natural landward migration of wetlands as sea level rises, which I'll touch on later, and reduces human activity adjacent to sensitive areas. Removal of the forests during the construction of this project reduce the effectiveness of the buffer zone and will increase, okay, the rate of wetland degradation. Yeah, and these show some of the wetlands in the center part of the lagoon area, so in between a couple of the lagoons. And one thing that the arrows point to are the trees that are actually dying. And they're dying from saltwater intrusion. As sea level rises, and I'll show you just statistics on that later, naturally wetlands migrate inland. Okay, and they have forever, okay, since the last ice age. And as they migrate inland, those tree species and plant species that are not salt tolerant, okay, die. And that's what's happening. It's showing the landward migration. And if you notice in this particular wetland, okay, this is a cord marsh wetland. Okay, this is not a Phragmites wetland.
Okay, I'm going to stop you here, okay, sir. And I'm going to ask you a couple things. Number one, I need you to put your credentials on the record for us.
I apologize. I meant to do that. Yes, sir.
Okay, you would go ahead and do that.
Okay. I have a Bachelor's of Science in Biology, University of Delaware, a Master's degree in Marine Science, University of Delaware. I am an instructor of Ecology, Oceanography, and Zoology at William Penn High School in Newcastle, Delaware.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I apologize.
And now I'm going to ask you to get the stuff sooner rather than later.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
We got
no
a
problem.
Full house.
Yeah, it is past my bedtime, too, so we're...
Lots of other people that
want to speak.
Okay,
go ahead.
Okay, so let's maybe try to wrap it up in another 2 minutes.
I will wrap it up in another 2 minutes for you, because you, right, you do have the documentation.
And this, yeah, I will say, too, just for everybody's benefit and yours as well, because we have the PowerPoint, mm-hmm, it will be made part of the record, and I can assure you
that's
that
one thing is
everybody
on the,
okay, the commission will review it.
That's
believe
fine.
Me.
Okay, so the bottom line is this, okay, and we're getting to the meat of it right here, and that's the buffer zone.
Okay,
the buffer zone, yes, they're not developing in the wetlands because they can't by regulation. Okay, but the buffer zones are equally as important. And because they are what keep the runoff and so forth from the wetlands, they also allow the wetlands to naturally migrate. If you develop against the buffer zone, Okay? And the sea level rises, what's going to happen is this, the marshland, the wetlands work into the buffer zone. The buffer zone disappears. When you get to the development, the wetlands disappear. Okay? And the inland bays are tremendously stressed, and as you said, you're going to read it. It's all documented. It's all cited. And that's the big problem. Now, of course, you also have the pollution, okay, of the additional of having people and all the amenities. The amenities, another thing, the hydrology part, is the increase in impervious surfaces, okay, where when it rains, you've got the tops of all the trailers, the buildings, some of the roadways. Water can't get in, can't recharge the aquifer. Also increases the runoff, okay, increases the speed of the runoff, which therefore increases the erosion of the shorelines going into there. Last thing, okay, is that two things actually. In terms of species that are in trouble, okay, the diamondback terrapin we talked about has been observed nesting on the sand ridges, okay, along the margin of the forest and in the field, and also in the spoil pile, which is where they are planning on getting their materials. Lastly, for hydrology, and with the pollution ties into this, the entrance to that lagoon system is at high tide, at mean high tide. And I went out here with my boat and a depth finder and actually, mapped it myself. Okay, is 1.7 to 2.3 feet. It might be off by a second. It's written in the report. Okay, key point is, it is much shallower than the lagoons, which are anywhere from 3 feet to 6.5 feet. So because you have a ledge, a flat, it decreases the flushing of the water coming in and out with the tidal cycle. So any pollutants that run into the lagoons, okay, and which will be increased, obviously, because of less buffer and more people, what's going to happen there is then that concentrates the pollutants in that area. And then when you do have a flood, nor'easter, that material then gets dumped out into the bay, okay, causing obviously more environmental issues with a system that is obviously already stressed. So let's go to the quick thing. That's the main things. And as you said, you have all this. Couple statements real quick. So I go to the last one here. Okay, and that is.
Put that where you can see it. How much you got left.
Okay, let me delay for a second so I can wait for the last screen. Okay, no, I'm kidding. Okay, so. So you got me out of sequence here, so I got to find out where it is. Okay. Destruction of the habitats and impacts of the native species of animals dependent upon them has been documented. Many of the species of greatest conservation need and designation of forested buffer areas, ecologically poor habitat, give one the idea of the importance of the wetlands for the forest sandy areas as well. Okay. The construction and continual disturbance of these areas by hundreds of guests, there will be no way of keeping them out of the wetlands, the buffer areas, okay, as well as park workers, will be washed into the fragile wetlands, causing continued problems, pollution runoff, and other disturbances. Okay, in the document, you'll see, and I'm done, okay, is that the state, DENREC, okay, has made statements about directly that they feel that the forests in these areas, okay, the forest blocks and wetland blocks should not be disturbed, okay, and it's in the document and it's referenced.
All right then.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Yep.